You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey, this is another Bald Move TV. We're shotgunning this because we actually started talking early, and I think there's some gold here. So we're talking about The Expanse, but we're venting our spleen about DC. The latest Wonder Woman trailer came out. We're going to talk about that for a minute. Jim's here. I'm Aaron. Also Levi from the Direct Podcast.
Hello.
Fame.
I'm here in body. I'm not here in mind.
You're not here in mind or spirit?
I don't know anything about the Wonder Woman. I don't know anything about Batman versus Superman.
You've never wondered at women, Jim? I know you.
I have, but
well, you're qualified.
This specific Wonder Woman, I don't know anything about.
So anyway, let's talk about this.
You guys do the first run Bald movies. You've seen the Wonder Woman trailer, have you not?
No.
I don't see how he hasn't. I think he just blacks out during them.
I haven't seen
it. He counts on me writing them down.
I mean, every theater is different. That's the one thing that I've learned from the Bald Move first run movies experience.
Like for example, I haven't seen a Beauty and the Beast trailer.
Right. I got one last week.
I've seen like 30 movies in the last 30 weeks, and I've yet to see the Beauty and Beast trailer. I've been to kids' movies. I've been to horror films. I've been to action flicks. I've been to space flicks. I've been to everything. Oscar bait.
I've managed to avoid the Beauty and the Beast.
I'm starting to wonder if they're just dumping it.
I saw one last week.
Like, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, at your theater, they're dumping it.
Well, I do go to the dump. It's just called the dump.
The dump. It's got a little tomcat on the logo. He's sitting in a...
He's taking a shit.
He's taking a shit.
Real watery one.
He's got one of those fish head skeletons in his mouth, and he's just taking a shit. It's called the dump.
That sounds like a lovely place.
Yeah. It's like the opposite of an Alamo draft house. they encourage you to have cell phone conversations.
Yeah.
You were saying about Warner Brothers.
Yeah, I can't believe they haven't pulled Zack Snyder at this point. He truly does not understand Superman.
Well, how are they going to do a Justice League film without Superman?
Are they
just going to bring him back to life
in five minutes?
Halfway. It's
supposed to be.
You're going to waste half
exciting.
A Justice League. You're going to waste half a Justice League resurrecting Superman, and then what?
You're going to spend half
kill
of
him
it
again.
Getting Aquaman, which I'm not sold on. Momoa,
really?
We got to get Cyborg in there, who we have seen no.
Yeah, I could give a fuck.
I don't pre-pro about Cyborg,
right? It'd be like, I said that about Ant-Man and Guardians of the Galaxy, and now I give a fuck about them because I've seen their movies. But if you'd launched half of the Avengers with Ant-Man and Star-Lord, I'd have been like, what? Half of this team I don't give a shit about.
Yeah, well, I think part of the issue that we're working from here is that Marvel started with Iron Man, and everybody was jazzed because they did
right.
a good comic book. Hero yeah. movie.
Right.
And then they have had ups and downs. Some are better, some are worse. But they have managed to keep a tone that people enjoy. DC
right.
hasn't had one yet, and they're just striding forward regardless. And I think it's trouble. I think they need to back off and try some other stuff. Start pulling up some weird one-off. Like Guardians of the Galaxy. I've been listening to Jesse and Eric, their old backlog of personal arrogance, and listening to Eric describe Guardians of the Galaxy and Jesse emphatically telling him that it was the worst idea ever,
totally
just based on Eric's description, I agreed with Jesse. It sounded super stupid.
It's totally. I thought it was going to be Marvel's first failure.
And it's, I think, the best one out of the whole series. And it doesn't need to be in the Marvel universe. It's just good sci-fi.
Yeah.
Talking raccoon and all.
Yeah.
Giant tree, assassin.
And it's funny, that's the thing. Like the DC, I feel like the DC people like to throw shade at Marvel because, oh, it's bubblegum and family and all that. But it's entertaining. Mm-hmm. Like Nolan shit was dark and depressing, but and awesome. Everyone loved it. Like, don't say that everyone's predisposed to hate DC. You got two of the biggest, most marketable people on the characters in all of fandom, Superman and Batman. You just threw them together, and people are like, meh. Like, that should everyone should be shitting their pants if they're at DC right now.
Yeah, it's not hard. It's a comic book. You can treat the movies like you treat comic books. Just reboot. Don't even bother pushing forward. Cut Zack Snyder.
You get out cut of Zack his Snyder.
Weird sepia-toned.
Here's the hell of it, man. They are going to flush the first Justice League movie down the toilet because they will not contemplate the fact that Zack Snyder is killing them.
Mm-hmm. Well, killing they're probably them. Paying a ton of money for him, and at that by the. We also, in the 15 minutes before we started recording, we talked about some home construction and how you buy a bunch of wood and then you're committed because if you don't, you have a bunch of wood laying around and you look like a maniac.
I just spent $150 on this wood. I'm going to not cut it up and put it together.
Yeah, you've got a pile. You have to get rid of that pile at some point. And I think that's...
The shame of burning it or throwing it away.
Yeah, they have this pile of...
Zack Snyder.
They put together their plan.
This pile of Snyder, it's stacking up, it's collecting termites.
It's moldy at this point.
It's moldy, there's dry rot set in, black mold, and they're like, oh, how are we going to unload it? How are we going to unload it? It's on Craigslist, it's just sitting there, because there's no photo, we can't put a photo
DC
on it.
DC properties to a good home.
They're going to throw away a Justice League movie. I'm just scared for my DC brothers because this should be fucking awesome. There should be two franchises. You should have two different flavors of comic book movies that you want. And like even Sony fucking told a compelling X-Men story. It's something they haven't done in like 10 years. And we still got Snyder. He's still Snyden.
Meanwhile, Marvel's like, hey, let's make some R-rated movies now. How's that sound?
Yeah. Yeah. It's bold, brave new world.
And I still haven't seen Suicide Squad. That's how bad DC is. That movie was advertised to me. I was very excited, and it was so rock bottom that I didn't go see it the first weekend.
Well, that's how this started, because I said, have you seen a new Wonder Woman trailer? And like, I've seen them all, and they all looked awesome. But I'm not gonna trust it's good until I actually see it.
Yeah.
I mean, Michelle McLaren was attached to that project for a while, and she got booted off of it. So that's when I was like, "Ooh, this seems."
Yeah, those things start to bleed through the edges, and it's hard. It's easy to see the stinkers coming.
Yeah.
And what's the worst case scenario? It's good. Somebody tells you it's good, and then you go see it the next week. But that's not ideal for the studios. So.
Yeah.
You know, but they've walked back into a corner where. Well, we have to ride this out to its bitter conclusion before we can reset.
Yeah, when Batman versus Superman, actually, when Man of Steel came out, they should have dumped Snyder because that guy just doesn't get what makes like he would tell a good like graphic novel version of Superman, like you know the one of this one shot like that those Superman like Dark Knight Returns old bit. That's the other problem with Batman versus Superman. He's now locked Batman into the old dark past his prime, cynical, butthurt about death of Robin, dour, might kill a dude Batman, and that's not a workable Batman for a whole anthology. That's a good Batman for a graphic novel. You're like, oh shit, darkest timeline Batman. But that's not the palette that you paint Batman with to begin with. It's crazy.
Yeah, especially it's crazy. They could have rebooted into that. Like, do one and then pick a different... Go back to the old school...
Right.
Like, we had Clooney Batman. We had... now I'm, like, blanking on all the Batmans.
Kilmer Batman.
Keaton Batman.
Keaton Batman. West Batman. Nolan Batman.
Giamatti Batman.
Schwarzenegger Batman.
Yep.
No, Schwarzenegger Iceman. How about that? Maybe for just do an Iceman. Or Mr. Freeze. Iceman, that's what he was.
Yeah,
do a
villain film. Fuck it.
And that could be dark. Mr. Freeze is a really moody son of a bitch.
That would be an excellent Batman that they've done it in animation a bunch of times. But just fucking run that plot back. It's awesome. That'd be a great Batman to start with. And the same problem. They got Superman painted in this incredibly dark, morose palette. He's not the big blue Boy Scout. He's a fucking, I don't know, well, Morrissey album.
He's emotionally weird because he's really bent out of shape about the human experience, but then he's also crawling into a bathtub with Amy Adams. Like,
right.
That movie had so... Batman vs. Superman had so little levity. There are two jokes. They both come at almost the end of the movie. It's the one about the cape.
Right.
And I thought she was with you. With you, about right. Wonder Woman. And that's it. That's really rough to run 2 hours on just two jokes when we're talking about a dude who dresses like a bat and a guy who is essentially a god-level superpower. And they're fighting a kid from Facebook. And he's kidnapped your mom.
Yeah.
I mean, that's...
Nah, it's so crazy.
And Batman's so going to come in and wreck all of these guys, super wrestling style.
Uh-huh. But they got a kryptonite spear, and they cloned Zod's penis.
Yeah, we picked a villain that has no character, does not talk, and he gets bigger when you punch him.
Uh-huh.
That's thrilling stuff.
Well, there goes, like, they also, they shoehorned the death of, they got introduction of Wonder Woman, Dark Knight Returns Batman, death of Superman story, Batman versus Superman, it's, which I understand is the Dark Knight Returns timeline as well, but it's just too much, man. And then you throw a really off-brand Lex Luthor performance, which that makes me appreciate Heath Ledger's The Joker more, because I feel like on paper... those two performances are the same. It's just they happen to have Heath Ledger and, you know, they got Mark Zuckerberg instead, and he just couldn't pull it off.
Why can't I think of his name?
Jesse Eisenberg.
And I saw what he was going for. I think he was trying. I chalk it up to direction and writing for... those a lot of the errors in those performances.
Yeah, Lex Luthor's just supposed to be, you're supposed to think that, oh wow, he's kind of the equal for Superman and Batman intellectually, and I just thought he was a clown, so.
Yeah.
Very good, he'd be a good Riddler. That performance would be a pretty bang-up Riddler performance.
The Riddliner.
The Riddler. The sidekick Adderall.
Yeah. Nice.
All right, so we brought you in here, Levi, to talk about The Expanse, which, if you don't know, is this season 2 started 7 weeks ago. It's a sci-fi show, hard science fiction show. I thought we'd spend 10 to 15 minutes talking about general non-spoiler thoughts about Expanse and why people should watch it, because it does seem like it's got a criminally low ratings. Like it should be more popular than it is, because I think it's like the first great science fiction film or science fiction franchise since, like, Firefly, because I never really liked Battlestar.
Yeah.
And I've never heard anybody say anything but good stuff about the show.
Right. Now, it's not perfect. There's a couple of points where I was deeply unsure of where it's going. And, in fact, I'm going to argue when we get to the spoiler section that the show that I'm watching is not the show that I thought I was watching through most of season one.
It's pivoted, but it's
still,
for sure.
It's pivoted, but it's still pretty cool. But what they're doing
it hasn't
is,
completely pivoted away from where it started yet. That's still in the mix.
Which I'm glad, because the latest episode gave me a lot of what I thought I was watching before. Like, right. And here's the thing. This show is set in like the 23rd century, I believe. It postulates that Mars has been colonized. The asteroid belts have been colonized. The moon and Earth are united under one United Nations government. Mars is a faction that's a confederation. And Mars, because they pioneered engine technology about 100 years ago, are this fantastically wealthy and technologically advanced, but resource-starved. Earth is the mother, but it's backwards and kind of lazy, and it's not the best and brightest are no longer staying on Earth, and it's kind of like an empire in decline.
But it does have the numbers.
It does have the numbers, and also life is easy there.
Right.
And then there's the Belters, who are the ones who mine asteroids and supply the belt and Mars with agriculture and water and all the resources they need, and they are second-class citizens.
Yeah.
And they really show these factions in conflict with each other, and like the and like what it would really look like to see like a Martian government at odds with the Earth government. And they have realistic depictions of like the transmission time, because you can't have like live conversations from Earth. But I just want to talk about like what are some of the things that we enjoy about The Expanse and why we are enjoying it as science fiction fans.
What surprised me the most, I was not going to watch this movie because I saw the Syfy label on it, but this show has a production value that I never would have expected from them ever.
Yeah.
The show looks good. The design is solid. The writing is good. It holds it together really well. I guess when you guys first watched it, was it just from the forums that you picked up the show?
No, I actually
personal recommendation.
Jim personally recommended it to me, and I actually was mad at him. I came in one weekend after I watched like a full season of the season one Expanse. I'm like, dude, you undersold this, because I was expecting kind of like somewhere between Doctor Who and Babylon 5 special effects. I was expecting like Firefly kind of set dressing and costuming. Mm-hmm. But you know, decent performances, and I thought the story is it's kind of like Babylon 5, where if you can look past the dodgy effects and some of the, you know, owl looking headdresses on dudes, the story's there. But like, no, I was blown away how like in the first few episodes they show the Earth as interrogating a Belter. Mm-hmm. They're just using gravity. They got the dude hung up by his armpits on hooks where he could just stand up if he could, but he's being crushed by Earth's gravity. It's crushing his heart and his lungs. And like when that woman, I forget her name, but she's just like really impressive Christian.
Yeah.
Like UN diplomat, like, you know, prime minister type character who's very intimidating. I just thought I was hooked from that scene forward.
See, I thought the reason I kind of undersold it to you, when I told you about it, I think I was like, it's a really good show. The sci-fi is really good, but I think there are some characters you might not like. Because some of the characters to me feel a little silly. I thought you would have more trouble with like the accent of Christian.
When Lane Price has to deliver more than two or three sentences of dialogue, it can get silly.
Right, yeah.
Because they have this almost South African sounding Creole.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like a mishmash.
Yeah, the belta loda, walla walla, bing bang. It's like they're always saying this stuff, and to me it instantly connected to like Firefly. Mm-hmm. Where it's like, this is what I know how far the accent has drifted from English.
Yeah.
And we've only had, 300 years of separation from the mother country. Mm-hmm. Like, if people were in space for 300 years, they would absolutely have their own distinct accents and dialogue and terminology and whatnot.
And they're kind of accents that you haven't heard before.
Yeah.
They don't have, a specific Earth accent. There's not, a bunch of Jamaicans out there.
I do think it's South African mixed with Caribbean.
Okay.
Yeah, sounds...
An interesting Creole. I don't know that much about language, but it sounds, they make it sound authentic. They make it sound this is a language where, you know, oxygen is limited. So of course you're going to speak differently, especially from people like Earth who take things like oxygen for granted.
Right.
It's really fascinating. The differences between the cultures, like they really make, Earth, the belt, and Mars and the first season we get some interaction with the Martians, but we don't see the home base, and so it has this really nice air of mystery.
We don't see Mars forever.
Interact with Mars.
And then there's a lot of really cool touches, like they just kind of throw you into this world. Like I notice, like, you know, one of the female characters has this interesting neck tattoo, like this, like almost a tribal neck tattoo. And I'm like, huh, I wonder what that is all about. And then I saw Lane Price's character has like scars that look like that. And I'm like, huh, I wonder what that. And then like in episode 7 of season 1, they casually mentioned that the old spacesuits the seal would sometimes overheat and burn these old belters. And the young belters get their necks tattooed as like an homage to that part of the culture. Like, that's fucking rad.
It's beautiful.
And just little world building like that happens half a dozen times an episode.
And I really like how they kind of mix the cultures too, right? You have a lot of people who, you know, are from Earth and are maybe out in the Belter society.
Right.
And they do feel like fish out of water in a sense, you know, they're always trying to prove themselves. They're always like kind of side-eyed by the people who have been there their whole lives.
Mm-hmm.
It feels very authentic.
And they're physically different, like multi-generational belters, like they're long and skinny and they don't have the bone mass and muscle mass.
Mm-hmm.
And the earthers, like, you know, they have to have, you know, a lot of corrective surgery. where the Earthers, they feel like they're the noble class. And then I thought it's also interesting they explored in season two, like, you know, some of the politics on Mars, where like a person born on Mars is of higher social status than an immigrant.
Right.
And there's a lot of, you know, present day social commentary.
Mm-hmm.
And Mars is so militaristic that they train it one Earth gravity, which Liz and I were talking about because we watched the show together. It's one of those imperialistic things that you don't think about frequently, but they're judging all the gravity of the system is based on Earth. Like, you are low gravity in comparison to Earth. Like, that never really left, even though Belters absolutely at this point are disassociated from it to the point where putting them at 1G in Earth is torture on a Geneva Convention level.
Right. Yeah, and I also think it's interesting that, like, Mars, and it makes sense because the first settlers on Mars would be astronauts who are wildly pulled from military culture. Plus, just anyone that would go colonize Mars is going to be a cross-grained bastard that is not used to creature comfort. And they talk about how soft the Earthers are. So it's almost, it's like this self-selection. Like, if you took all the hard asses that wanted to better themselves and put them on Mars, they would have this hard-boiled Martian culture where they look down at the, you know, they look down at the mother planet because it's so soft and so easy. And there's also other little things like have you noticed the coasts being all fucked up? Like half of Florida's gone because of the glaciers have melted, the sea levels risen. Like they showed a couple episodes ago, like Florida, and it's remarkably different because of the rising sea levels. There's like little nods to that stuff too is in this show.
Are you only catching that in like the zoom in of the planet? I've never.
They haven't mentioned. It's just like there was an overhead shot of Earth, and we're like, oh my god, it's like that. Florida looks really fucked up, but it's great. Now, to point your characters, there's a couple of ones that I thought like Thomas Jane,
the Punisher. He was one I was worried you wouldn't like. Yeah,
he's dressing like some kind of 70s era pimp. With a fedora.
I mean, he's this.
And he's like this private.
Detective noir, right?
He's a film noir, but like, I just wish they'd done anything but a goofy little fedora to sell that character.
What about the mohawk underneath the fedora?
Then it just like takes the hat off and just keeps getting worse.
You don't want to see what happens when he takes his shirt off.
He's a great character, and honestly, just a wardrobe change would have fucking helped me immerse a lot sooner. A lot sooner.
Yeah.
The other thing is I love about this hard sci-fi of it. Like, ships accelerate until they get halfway to where they're going, then they turn their ass around and reverse to slow down. And there's like, and also the space battles are lethal.
Yeah,
like you feel what it's like to be a crew member getting shot up. Like these mass drivers just ripping into your ship, and like there was a couple like spectacular zero gravity gore scenes.
That was the thing that really got me, was kind of how true to the physics they were being, I think. You know, as much as they can when they're filming on Earth.
Right, right.
So, you know, you have these mag boots that they use, and okay, they don't move completely naturally, but at least the concept is there, and paying doing
attention.
More than paying lip service. Yeah,
they're
paying
attention
to it.
Yeah.
And just stuff like, yeah, that, I don't know how specific we want to get, but the gore scenes are really, really good. And just the way, like you were saying, the lethality of the battles where bullets are whizzing by, and when they hit you, they just punch holes in the ship that can kill you.
Right. It's like Cecily, we were talking about this. She's like, I don't understand why they don't armor their ships better. And I'm like, because mass is expensive in space, and it's like the old age of sail. Like, it's not that they were sailing in wooden boats, flinging cannonballs at each other and being like, God damn, why don't we do something different? They couldn't think of something denser that would still float and stronger. So it's like, it reminds me a lot of those, like, it's just quick and violent and a lot of luck involved too.
I really enjoy the fact that they're taking not just naval. Well, I think a common issue I have with some sci-fi, like you look at Star Wars, space battles, they're dogfights.
Sure.
But the reality is that you're in a three-dimensional environment.
Right.
The notions of direction are totally screwy. And so they do a better job in this show of making it seem more like a submarine battle. Like there's a lot, they talk about the drive signatures. That's something that we do with, I had learned this, I was get my dad into the show, mm-hmm. and I was saying that how they track the drives, like each engine of the ship has a distinct signature. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was cool. It made sense. And he pointed out submarines do that. Every submarine has a very distinct sound it makes. And we know submarines from that. Mm-hmm. And it's very much part of like the military complex is mm-hmm. knowing the sound, because they're all like, there's just minor imperfections that make that stuff unique. So between that, between the notion that everybody has to strap in, like there's mm-hmm. When you're making these maneuvers, if you're not in a seat, you are being flung around this ship
violently. Yeah. There's no inertial dampeners. If they do a 12 G turn, you're going to get fucked if you're not strapped in.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's brutal. That's high gravity. Like that's rough. And I texted Jim first about the show because I mean, sci-fi is much more up your alley than fantasy. And this show follows some rules.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, that's the thing. You know, they don't ignore the 12G turns when it suits them. Mm-hmm. They play into it, right? Mm-hmm. They say, okay, we're going to make a 12G turn. What are the consequences of that? And let's have that be part of the show.
And like, maybe a crew member is going to be unsecured in a cargo bay because he's trying to repair something. Right. Are you going to risk his life because you have to do this violent? Are you going to take the shots? Like, stuff like that is just really cool, and they continually impress me with that stuff. Mm-hmm. I also, like, if you're a Walking Dead or The Wire fan, like, Chad Coleman gives this really superior non-Chad Coleman performance. Like, he looks like he's put on some weight. He's talking and almost calling it like a Batman Bale voice is not correct. He's just different than – he's not Cuddy. He's not – Tyrese, was that his name? On The Walking Dead. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's none of the he's a different type of Chad Coleman and just a really awesome character. And that's like other than Thomas Paine and the Lane Price, who is actually I keep calling him Lane Price. He's not Lane Price.
He's Dawes.
Yeah, he does. Like those are the only really famous. Those are the only famous people. But like, I do think that there's like the leader of the Belter starship that gets established quickly. I call him Space Jon Snow.
Yeah, that's apt.
But then like Amos is like we probably need. I think again, if you're a science fiction fan, I don't know why you're not watching this show right to hell now.
Yeah.
But if you actually like drama that's based on, like, it's almost like political potboiler. Mm-hmm. Like what is the politics between Mars and Earth with the belt and the balance and different factions and they all want different things and they're all, you know, had hundreds of years of time to get paranoid. Like, it's kind of interesting. And, like, if you don't like fantasy, but there's like Game of Thrones because of all the machinations and stuff, there's a lot of that there, too. Mm-hmm.
Stuff for straight up, like, fantasy style sci-fi fans, you know?
Yeah, and just like some of the like the fact
it gets pretty out there sometimes.
Like there's not a spoiler, the Mormon church is leading the path of humanity, blazing a trail to the stars because they've rolled it into their missionary work. That's fucking brilliant. I totally believe the Mormons
really
would have the
rolled
money.
My eyes hard at that.
Do you really?
I did. I've gotten used to it since then. The whole thing with the Nauvoo, I've gotten used to it, but like, man, when they first introduced the concept of the Mormons in this show, I was like, oh, are you kidding me?
I can see the Mormons like having the wealth and the population and the spirit to do something like that in 300 years.
Well, right. It's a generational starship. They open these little doors into really cool science fiction concepts.
Yeah.
They don't walk through every one of them.
Right.
Which I really appreciate.
Right. But they're it's there. That door's there. Mm-hmm. They might walk through it in season 5. You never know.
Or they might get dressed up in their white shirt and their black pants and knock on it.
Now, are you guys have you guys read any of the books? Because I hear that the first season is roughly analogous to the very first book in the Expanse cycle.
No,
I haven't either, and I don't think I will until the series is either over or the books are complete, because I ain't going to start another Game of Thrones situation again.
Have you guys?
There's a bunch of those books, like implying that if they can make enough money, that they've got like 5, 6, 7 seasons worth of material here, at least.
if they can keep it together.
It's
one of those shows where I worry that over time it won't. It'll get too convoluted. It'll get too big.
Lost
because it starts. Yes. That first episode is so condensed. There's so much happens.
Yeah.
You don't know who the main characters are until you get to the end of that episode.
Right.
Like, honestly, I had no idea how that
like when Jonathan Banks was introduced as the EXO of the Starship, I'm like, oh, main character. Mm-hmm. This is kind of cool. Nope. He was there for 5 minutes of badass and then gone.
And people make it into good stretches for the show and then just drop off. And it's not a Game of Thrones murder scenario. It's just sometimes those stories
But I
run
do feel like they have established this thing where, much like Game of Thrones, this world is so harsh and brutal and uncompromising that anyone can die at any time and major characters suffer. Like, you might take a rail cannon shot out of nowhere, or you might run out of air because something went wrong in your suit, or any kind of grisly thing could happen to you guys. It's fucking space, man. That they have sold me. Like, I'm deathly afraid for my favorite characters, and I've got. Let's go around the room. Who's your favorite character, Levi?
Naomi, for sure.
Naomi.
Yeah,
all right.
That's pretty good.
That's
pick.
A solid
fascinating.
Pick.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
Lovely too. Yes. Jim, your favorite character?
I'm all about Miller.
Miller.
I really like Miller, yeah.
So you're bumming hard right now.
Wait, I thought we were doing spoilers yet.
I thought we were doing spoilers.
When did we start spoilers?
We never fired off like a
when we start talking about favorite character, okay, from here on out, there's spoilers.
Oh, from 2 minutes ago, there's spoilers.
No, from here on out, I don't think we spoiled anything big for someone to sit down and watch a show.
All right.
So
well, they're bumming, but there's a lot of unknowns.
Yeah, there's a lot. So my favorite character is Amos.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's
now,
he's good.
There's something, because here's the thing. I think he's the one that's the most interesting, because no other character can ask the question, is he a psychopath? I got a heart like my biggest pet peeve is everyone talks like he's a psychopath. I think he's an extremely rational character given the environment that he's in and the situation he finds himself in. And his like speech about the churn, mm-hmm. I thought was so fucking brilliant about just a common man living in interesting times. What do you think he's psychotic or a psychopath or a sociopath, Levi?
I think he's brutally logical to the point where we've reached the point in the show where, you know, with the scientist who's been lobotomized, they're very close to one another. Amos.
And that's where I get hung up on him.
Yeah.
But he's logical. He explains every action he takes. And
he's like, hey, and you don't have to agree with me. You can try to stop me. But this is what I think.
He's got a simple set of rules.
Yes. Yeah.
And even for the killing that he's willing to do, the episode where Holden is holding a gun to his head and he goes, well, if you need to shoot, that's cool.
Yeah. He's like, yeah, that's the situation.
He would just deal with them immediately.
Right.
But there's sort of a weird respect, you know, it hadn't reached a point with him, and I think he understands the other characters very well.
Yeah, he respects Space Jon Snow's righteousness so much.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think he even has a speech about, like, this is as close as a fair and judicial and righteous person as you're going to find out in space.
But he's also a vigilante in his own way, which
oh yeah, that's what I love about him.
Well, but it's also very problematic.
Is when... it?
Come on. You're the man who always says that vigilantism is
I don't live in a fucking asteroid belt. Like, I think in the
How
old
does that
West,
change the equation at all?
Because when there is not a functioning system of rules and law and order and justice.
No, I don't believe it. There is a functioning system. All of these places have governments. All of them.
But did you see how corrupt the fucking police are out in the belt? They're like completely on the take
not
for some
Thomas
of these gangsters.
Jane. Not Thomas Jane.
Yeah, and he got thrown out an airlock and turned into an immortal space alien, probably.
Out of an airlock.
Yeah.
Yeah, when he crosses Dawes.
Yeah, they throw him in an airlock and
remember
and the only
back
one...
further. Oh, Miller yeah. was yeah. doing. He had a side thing going with the guy about the air filters.
Yeah,
but I, what I'm saying is, like, you have to count on this guy to be 100% right, or that time when he's not, he's going to take matters into his own hands and do the wrong thing.
I agree, but I do like in Amos, I trust.
Okay.
And the show,
like, that's fine. I don't.
The show is starting to ask that question: what if Amos is wrong? Like, and I really like that. It's
or what if Amos? What if Amos decides he wants a lobotomy and wants to study xenobiology? Like, I don't want him to do that because he's my favorite dude.
Right, but I mean, they're purposely drawing comparisons between him and that doctor.
Certainly.
I think that's an interesting thing to do.
And we're getting Amos' backstory. You know, he freaked out at the mom and the, like, little boy that defended his mother. Like, or there's triggered a extended PTSD sequence. Like, that's,
and it's believable too. If you if you had put anybody else in that room with that scientist and said they're gonna start to feel feel the same way he does, I would have said no fucking way.
But this guy's just weird enough.
Yeah.
The other thing I like about him is that he's got this baby face.
Uh-huh.
And when he first stepped on screen and they established that he's going to be the tough guy, I'm like, get the fuck out of here. Until the first time he laid down the law.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, this guy is also, yeah, he does look like a Ken doll, but he's like a fucking beast.
Yeah, he's...
Like when he punched out Miller and said, stay down, I'm like, Miller, you should stay the fuck down.
That was vicious.
Yeah, just dropped him.
Like you said, people mistake him for a psychopath, but it took a while to understand his mechanisms, because at first you just think, like you said, this show is filling a Firefly gap. It's not mimicking it, but it's got a ship with a crew that you're rooting for.
Mm-hmm.
They're not all awful people. And
they're extra legal.
Kinda, yeah, on the edge of the law.
That. Yeah. They're essentially pirates. Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah, and they're pirate. They've pirated a Martian warship. It's not too powerful. Like, they describe it as a corvette, which is like the smallest kind of ship that you can still properly call a ship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's pretty awesome. Now, a couple other things I want to talk about. You guys can suggest topics too, but I want to talk about, this isn't a perfect show, and there's two times, maybe three, that the show's almost lost me.
All right.
The show I thought I was watching was a taut political thriller about Martian Earth tensions with the belt hung in the balance.
Yeah.
And then they fucking Prometheus'd me.
Mm-hmm.
They've got aliens running around and blue goo and all this stuff. And I was a little bummed that, like, oh, they're going to make this, like, the humans are more interesting than some theoretical alien technology or whatever. But they've kind of, like, when it infected the asteroid and started moving.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm like, okay, that's kind of interesting. And then they gave but then it culminated in, like, I thought one of the biggest flaws is Miller finally finds this girl he's been looking for, this Julie or Julia, and she's infected all the hell and back with this virus. We thought she was dead, but she's actually evolved into this big superstructure, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's fallen in love with her. Like, they asserted that, like, Dawes asserted that, and I thought that was something that he did as a deliberate ploy to make him think to throw him off the trail. But it turns out, I guess he does love the girl.
Mm-hmm.
They finally meet, and she kind of reciprocates instantly. Did anyone think that was kind of bullshit? Or have they had some kind of weird mind bond this whole time through the psychic hamster robot network?
Well, to me, it didn't feel like she was quite with it in those moments. And she didn't quite understand what was going on. And maybe this was not
that,
like...
That kind of makes him a rapist.
Like, no. He didn't force anything on her.
Right. She's just confused because she's under the influence of this strange substance coursing through her body. He's Bill Cosby.
He's a damaged human being emotionally. Like, we've gathered that from Square One.
I just thought, I wish that they played it a little bit more like, who the fuck are you? And I don't understand what's going on. And he still can love her, but more in a abstract, theoretical sense. And then they crash into Venus, which is crazy. Do you guys want to talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, I guarantee they're coming back.
That's they're going to come back as...
Venus is infected at this point.
Yeah.
They're going to come back as super... acid-proof, badass Venus people.
Yeah.
They're Adam and Eve for a hellish world.
I think we're going to get a... We don't... I think we're going to get an intelligent fourth party into the equation that is probably isolationist, honestly. I think that it's going to be that question of... It's of the ways it could go, one of the more interesting is that is showing that humans are this expansionist asshole creature
that's
in
just
the
in our blood. Right.
And when something else encroaches into our territory, we freak out, we try and weaponize it. It defends itself, finally removes itself to what it thinks is a safe place, and we keep poking at it. We keep.
Yeah. So you think the aliens are good? Because I thought it was telling that it left the Marine alive. And almost, and maybe, which by the way, beautiful visuals this week. The blood snowflakes falling. Man. Mm-hmm. Like when I first realized what was happening, I'm like, oh, fuck you guys. That's cool. That is some really cool shit. But the alien seemed like it spared the Marine's life when it didn't have to. So it does reinforce your point there, Levi. It seems like they're telling a story of humans overreacting to intelligence and just shooting at it instead of trying to talk to it.
I think that might be something different because there is a flash of something, and I don't know what that is. But maybe we get a...
Oh, no, the twist,
it could be that this proto-molecule is defending against whatever this other... Because this other creature was a totally different level from what we saw before.
Right.
So this could... There's a lot of... Do you guys read C.J. Sherry?
No.
I've read some of her.
She has a lot... What I like a lot about her sci-fi is that she really tries... When it comes to aliens... She tries to really not define them in human terms. And then like the Foreigner series, that's one of the first big points in the stories is this guy who continues to, you know, you have a race of aliens that are kind of Avatar-like, big elfy looking creatures. And he mistakes a lot of science for friendship, but they don't culturally have friendship. That's just not a thing that they understand, and it bites him in the ass a couple times because he relies on people who he mistakes for friends.
Right.
And I am hoping that this show is hard enough sci-fi that it is that we are misinterpreting an alien reaction. Like the alien doesn't understand the notion of invading the solar system.
Right. Like, and they show us some stuff like humans getting nabbed up by tentacles and stuff, and that feels malevolent, but if you look at it as a system trying to figure out what the hell's going on and just assembling data and stuff, like, we don't know that, you know, just like the Marines are running from it and shooting with assault rifles, like, that's pretty fucking hostile, too. Like, I think that a lot of the stuff that we see as hostile and malevolent is just a creature trying to figure out its environment.
Yeah, it's going to be very Guillermo del Toro, I think. The humans are the monsters.
Well, I did read that people... they said it was a smart choice, but I guess the book version of them going to Eero Station and seeing her, like, Julie hooked up to all this shit, was much more H.R. Geiger, the book description. Mm-hmm. And this was much more Avatar, which I think it's a smart choice because, like, if Thomas Jane starts making out with the Borg Queen, it's going to be, you know, but it was already pretty freaking creepy that she's, like, part of the ship, part of the crew. And I thought it was interesting that she thought that she was racing. Like, I don't know if I bought all that stuff, too. I don't know.
But that's what...
They established that character.
I thought that was the mid-season episode. And so I was like, this is a... I loved it. I loved the idea of the... We're going to go blow this thing up and drive the Naboo in it.
Right. Oh, that was a fucking cool... The bombs
screw up, and I thought that, okay, Miller's dead. That's cool. They're going to kill Thomas J. Like... All right, way to go, sci-fi. You're going to kill a major actor on your show. Because they've killed people, but that would be the first big one. And then
I thought when they killed the medic, that was pretty big.
Yeah, he was... I know him from stuff, although
He was actually my favorite before Amos. And when he died, when he got his head taken off, because like I was just like, "Holy shit!"
Right, I forgot that's how
he
went.
Yeah, sucking the blood out. And then like that bubble of blood that just hangs.
And
over
then
his
when
neck.
The gravity reestablished, just splashed straight down all over him.
That was
pretty freaking cool.
Here's the thing that I like about the aliens, and maybe something that will put your mind at ease, Aaron.
Okay.
You could also view the aliens as sort of insight into how humans will react to it and how that will affect the political structure here because, you know, we've seen the war room,
right.
Of the UN, the UNN, is that what it's called
here?
United Nation of Nations or some shit.
It's United Nations.
We've seen their war room and like, they don't know if this is a Mars attack. Mars doesn't know if it's an Earth attack.
Right.
Like they don't know where this weapon came from. They don't know what there's so much unknown here, and you can see these people reacting to it and trying to get their hands and their heads around it. And it's interesting from that angle, too.
So do we think – I always want to ask this to firm up my understanding of this stuff. Do we think that the Julie's father – is the fourth party out there that's built the cloak warships and
I think so.
Is starting all this ruckus.
I think that's a fair assumption.
Okay. Where it's pointing I thought so far. Too. Because I was for the longest time I was trying to figure out who, because they tried it like maybe it's Fred, maybe it's Dawes, maybe it's his other, but I feel like that he's going to be the chief villain on humanity's side. Okay.
Yeah. And in all of this, don't forget, this ship is named the Rocinante. That's Don Quixote's
horse. Right.
Like this, he chased a lot of windmills, and I think that there is. If I were trying to be cute, I would make sure that wraps in at the end.
Yeah, I also love how the crew of the Rocinante, who are there's a Mars veteran, there's an Earther who. That guy's an interesting story. He has five dads and three mothers, because they genetically fused. They did some kind of hippie experiment. They genetically fused the DNA from all eight of them, so they could all be his daddy and mommy. And they're gonna. It's. I thought that his backstory is kind of interesting. In this, you know, like cult environment, I'm always a sucker for that. But you've got like you know two belters, and then. Shoot, I forgot what the point I was going to make about. I had a sick Don Quixote reference about all this stuff too, but it makes them interesting politically because they're like the hero. I mean, Mars seems like they're the most militant of it, but the Belters like they've got instant political clout because they were the crew that got exploded, you know, and got the Belters all in uproar at first. And I forget the name of that ship, but it's like, you know, remember the whatever. Mm-hmm. And then they were the ones that saved. They're the heroes of the Eros situation. They've got a lot of political clout. And I thought it was interesting the tensions between this guy from Earth, who now seriously identifies with the Belters, but he's kind of being frozen out from his own position. And even his girlfriend, who is a Belter, is kind of skeptical that an Earther could, you know, really get their struggle. I thought that's interesting because, you know, it's interesting when political factions make interesting bedfellows. Like there's always this distrust. It's like, you know, like how can this person be an actual ally? You know, like they're part of the oppressors. How in the world could they actually be? You know, do we even need them? Do we want them in the struggle? I thought that was interesting.
Well, it's the Fellowship of the Ring. Like, all of these people represent different parties. They have the same general course of action. We don't want to die.
And you have my mass driver.
But I really, and that's, Naomi to me, that's why I like her the most, because she was OPA, had some sort of falling out. She knows a lot. But she goes back and forth about what she's trying to, she kind of weaves back and forth. And now we're getting into the side where, you know, she's starting to shut out Holden to advance what she thinks is the right thing to do. And that's interesting. That's throw them in a ship and shake it up and see how you kind of roll the dice.
Like, it's funny because you think the crew of the Rocinante kind of sees things eye to eye, but then you're really, these last two episodes are showing the fractures in, you know, that relationship that's like, oh, these guys are like, you know, shipmates and they're family now. And like, you know, Alex doesn't want Amos fighting his fights for him. And I thought that was kind of interesting, although I would want Amos to fight all my fights for me. So,
yeah.
And that's the other thing. I thought Alex's point last episode is kind of bullshit, too, because like, I don't think Amos thought he's weak. You know, like, you're the guy that fights the ships, and I'm the guy that fights the fists. So, like, what the hell?
Yeah, and even Amos seemed to have a moment of awareness when Alex talked about not flinging him around in the Rossi during the fight with the stealth ship. And that cost lives. He basically told Amos, I saved your life and 17 people died for it.
Right.
So get off my back. And that's Alex is super interesting. And I think he's the least of the four. And it's only because he doesn't have any weird tics.
He's going to. He's got some fucked up shit with
He's building it.
Yeah. He's got a dossier a mile thick in the Mars Academy. Just you wait.
Yep. And we definitely wrote off whoever the family was in the pictures at the start of the show. That's the weirdest thing about this show is that in a season and a half, I was watching the first two episodes. I forgot how much they've kind of fired up with, and they just, they shed a lot of information that's not relevant, which is impressive for a show that wants to be big.
But we're going to, I mean, that will instantly pay off as soon as we get around to the Alex backstory episode, which is coming. don't believe it's not coming.
We're going to need an Amos season for backstory to just understand how you have to be.
Spinoff series, Amos, Beltaloda, starting on Sci-Fi next season.
He starts to go through other Sci-Fi shows fighting their yes. muscle. So he fights fights whoever that guy is in Dark Matter.
I'm going to fight Worf, of course. Yeah. He'll just blow Worf through a bulkhead.
Yeah, one punch. Speaking of Amos, where the hell is he? I have a guess.
What do you think is that?
He's on the ship with the scientist and Dawes.
So we think that the Dawes took off, and then during the cloak burn that they sent out a lifeboat, right? Because the full ship is.
Or they released two ships, and they were so busy chasing the first, they didn't see the
second.
They zeroed in on Dawes, because that was Dawes' ship. They were like, Dawes must be on his ship.
Yes, but you can't tell me that Tycho would not be aware of another ship trying to leave them.
But by that time it was too late.
By OPA.
Yeah, but we know these ships have lifeboats and other ships. I think they just popped a lifeboat or something.
It's a long way to go.
Or they jumped out because this kid survived being spaced before.
Yeah, his uncle.
So
his
uncle. Yeah, and they never showed that's everything. They never showed him being rescued. It's just he showed up later.
That was a little weird.
I wonder if they're doing that to show that Dawes is going to have someone else come on another trajectory, like on a stealth burn. Like they're just coming in to pick him up while the Rocinante blows past them, because they just might have jumped out in their airs. I thought it was interesting that the kid was wearing his space suit, because it's almost like that the ship got vented to space. I guess the engine damage could have done that to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If FTL has taught us anything, it's that sometimes your oxygen goes and you need to suit up.
You got to suit up. You got to suit up or get a Rockman to fix your shit. There's no Rockman in this.
Jim, that's such an exciting thought. All I can picture now is an episode and I just want one episode. No dialogue, no direct dialogue. And we're just watching Amos just ghost everyone on this ship. He just comes up behind him, just chokes him out, and then moves on to the next one.
Like it's like a Tom Clancy game.
It's like Metal Gear Solid. It's Metal Gear Amos.
Yeah.
And he's stuffing everybody in a locker.
He leaves one body in the hallway just so people run up and be like, oh my god, someone's knocked out, so you can knock them out too.
Yep. He starts flicking quarters into corners.
That was like in the last Uncharted, that was my favorite thing to do. Like I had you know how you could hide in the tall grass? Mm-hmm. I had this one grassy mound that had 50 motherfuckers in it. Like there's just ankles sticking out and arms and just he was standing on top of this mound of bodies that I'd lured over here and snapped their necks. Yeah, I could totally. Amos needs his own stealth game, except there's no stealth. He just runs around snapping necks.
Have we covered all the? Holden's just, he's kind of a moral compass.
Yeah.
And he's generally interesting.
I really hated him in season one. He got pretty good I like how he's kind of rounding into shape they made him the de facto leader last season, and I didn't buy it.
Mm. Yeah.
I don't understand why Alex and Amos is following this guy, but I feel like he's kind of grown into it, kind of the way I think the real Jon Snow did.
Wasn't it just basically because he had rank on him? He got promoted.
But they even address it. You're going to pull rank when we're basically 90% of our crew died.
Mm-hmm.
There is no power structure. Plus, it's a company. It's not a military unit. Go fuck yourself.
But it's an easy way to kind of pick somebody.
I guess.
It's a way that can shake out. And I think, he's definitely grown into it. and he's becoming more of a character. And I like that occasionally he's wrong in pretty big ways.
Oh, yeah.
You know? And he has to own up to that and change his mind when the information changes.
Okay, a big question. Were you guys pro killing the head scientist at the Eero Station debacle or
absolutely
anti?
I'm pro.
Every time.
I think it was, yes, probably a bad move, but
I was
oh
mad.
So justified.
I was mad when they did it, but then when they asked Jane or Miller why he did it, and it was because he was making too much sense.
Right. Right.
I thought that was a pretty fucking good explanation for doing it, and I was kind of back on his side.
Well, and that's the danger of the... I mean, that's the thing. If this is... It's a little bit of a Batman scenario. We have a little bit of a space Batman with a faux hawk and a fedora. although we never... When was the last time we saw the fedora?
It was it's like been, season yeah, one. It was a while.
Because that's
we
the
lost
thing
it
they...
like Indiana Jones and didn't grab it before we left.
Yeah, and they I feel like they only did the hat so they could pay off him meeting his partner and said, "You stole my hat." Like, he couldn't have stole his lucky rabbit's foot or his favorite wallet. Or, like, it has to be that dumbass hat.
Wait until he comes rising above the clouds of Venus wearing that yeah hat, and it's glowing blue. He's
yeah,
grown
yeah
it out
it's
of crystal.
It's his residual self-image.
it's made out of stars and shit, you know. Yeah.
Keeps the rain off my head.
It's just going to be it's going to be like a 2001 style monolith, except for it has a fedora on it.
It's a tiny, giant baby
yeah,
Venus in space.
Star child.
He's gone through a couple of variations on the Mohawk. He had the long hawk for a while, mm-hmm, which just yeah turned into a flop hawk.
I also love that scene where he went to the Mormons, because they almost sold me that he was going to convert.
Yeah.
And it turns out he's just gathering intelligence so he can come up with the idea of, yeah, we should fling this at Eros and knock it out of orbit. And the balls to have him, like, he has to sit back there with and arm the nuke. I thought that was a cool concept. And they kind of, there is a little bit of a Glenn dumpster fire situation going, because I thought Holden and Miller getting the fatal dose of radiation
right
and that instantly yep being fixed in one episode is kind of shitty.
Me too. It was the end of the season, right?
Right. And yeah, then they put and then they put him in this other mortal danger, and I'm like, okay, well, fine, whatever. But then when the Navoo came and like it was clear that it had missed, uh-huh, I thought that was pretty ballsy.
Yeah.
To take that big of an asset. That's something that you'll never see again in the series. Mm-hmm. Like yeah, that's something that took like unimaginable wealth and time to construct. And just fling it into the sun.
Right. Yeah, it's almost like a Death Star. Oh, we got three of those.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
maybe they just Death Star. Oh, we had another one under construction.
Yeah, the Mormons were building another in secret, because it's no mm-hmm big thing. Why not? If you build one, you know what's cool? Two. It's funny, because when I first saw the starship, I thought the whole thing was just this giant golden cherub. But then I realized that was like the hood ornament of the ship, and that made much yeah more sense.
Yeah, a masthead on a spaceship is a great look.
It is mm-hmm a cool look. I like it. Like,
it
why
lets
not?
You know who is running the ship.
Damn straight.
Jesus.
Damn straight.
Jesus behind that wheel.
That's right.
The first piece they put into place.
Right.
Built but just from the cherub down.
Yep. Yep.
But I also like that, you know, they kind of fake you out, and they say, oh, we're going to kill Miller. Oh, no, we're not. And then they go ahead and do it anyway.
I think
Venus,
that Miller,
right,
as we knew him, is dead. Like, Miller yeah might oh, yeah, come back, yeah, but he's going to be, at the very least, Gandalf the White version.
Right.
A little off.
Yeah.
He's lost a little bit of his warmth and humanity. Worst case scenario, he's going to be the start of a new race.
Right.
That is going to have their own agenda and desires and thoughts.
Yeah, there's something very Adam and Eve about Julian Miller.
Yep, that's what I'm saying. But instead of being put in a Garden of Eden, they're put down in literal hell. Because I was reading like how like Venus is not to be fucked with. It's probably the least hospitable planet that is in the like terrestrial planet in the solar system.
Isn't there a C.S. Lewis story? One of the in his space trilogy, isn't Venus an Adam and Eve scenario?
Probably.
With the devil rolling around?
That sounds like it.
I don't know if you guys ever read those, but.
It sounds appropriately allegorical.
Well, yeah. I disagree. I think Uranus is the most hostile.
Maybe Uranus.
I had to get it in there. Had great to get that joke in there.
Great job, guys.
Yeah, so do you think we'll have to wait until next season to hear them again? Because I feel like they could spend the rest of the season dealing with what's going on in Ganymede.
Yeah.
Which is the destruction of the bread belt of the soul, of the asteroid belt. Like, they're talking about millions of people going to starve because they were growing so much food on Ganymede. Do you think we'll see more from the blue space monsters? I mean, as far I'm talking about Miller and Julia's branch.
Oh,
not the one run around on Ganymede.
I think maybe at the end of the season we'll get a glimpse.
Yeah,
I don't think there will be much though.
You think it'll be tease?
We got 6 more episodes, and honestly, like I said, I would have been perfectly content had they just kept this human scale.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I'm not convinced I need the aliens, and I'm kind of skeptical of the aliens until they do something really, really cool with it. Smacking Eros into Venus better pay off, because, man, a lot of time and attention was sent on that part of the plan. And
That's the thing. Like, if you look at I don't know her name, but the Martian soldier who was on Ganymede.
Gunny,
yeah, whatever her actual name is.
She's the woman with the most powerful legs in the solar system.
Right.
I think she's training at 3G just to, like, because, like, they're just fucking incredible. Walnut crackers. Anyway.
If you look at the setup for her whole situation there, she's got an entire team of buddies here,
right,
fellow soldiers who just get wiped out.
That they spent a lot of time and attention developing their character and forging them into a unit, and then, nope. Yeah.
And I was starting to dig it. I was like, okay, so we got another Earther situation here in the mix, like a Coleman or any of those. And no, they just wipe that out. They're like, yep, clear the board.
Which the thing that I'm getting a little sick of is acting like this gunnery sergeant is any kind of political player.
Anytime
she talks about how, like, we need to go to fucking Earth and fuck shit up, I'm like, oh, settle down.
Well, now she's being thrust into it.
Well, also, so why is Mars trying to cover up the life form?
Oh, I think this is a mutual.
So you think Julie's dad has Mars?
You don't let on that you don't know.
But do you think? Because I also thought it was painting something more sinister. Like, Julie's dad, not only does he have a puppet on Earth, he has a puppet on Mars. Like, he's like next level running shit.
Good.
Which is why he's totally not afraid of the inside. Like you know, like how bad it is to get in trouble with the federal government, like. Uh-huh. This is 2 levels above that. This is the government of the moon and Earth that's now pissed off at you, and you're like, whatever.
Mildly interesting, I would say.
Mm, mm. Have you read the books, you bastard?
No, I haven't. But I just that's how I feel. I'm just so intrigued by this idea of when was the last time we saw Jules Pierre-Mao? Was like the first quarter of this season.
Mm-hmm.
He's kind of been out of it, so it would make sense. It would be, he has technology that both sides want, especially in the stealth ship. And we've gotten the pitch from Fred Johnson that, you know, you need something to trade on. Like, he talks about the nukes as being a bargaining chip or a deterrent.
The Which I thought was smart.
Same way. If Mao has a fleet of them and he offers them to Mars, and Mars is, if we are to understand Sergeant Bobby, that Mars wants to kick ass. Like, they want, she doesn't shut up. She wants to, all she talks about is, I want to be on Earth. Put me on Earth. I'm going to kick some ass.
Right.
And it was getting kind of obnoxious. So I was glad she got her ass kicked.
And she has that weird, like, core cheer, like, who will drink Earth's oceans?
Yeah, who will
Marines?
Smash
who
their
will
mountains
who
into
will
dust?
Grind? Yeah, grind their mountains to dust. Who will shit down their volcanoes?
Yeah, that was the least.
Who will chop down their tree? Like, it's like, okay, all right, Captain Planet's going to have a word for you when you arrive. He's going to be Don Cheadle's going to be so pissed. He's going to turn you to a tree.
For a disciplined military unit, she does talk a little sassy.
If we want to do some friendly fan nitpick, when she says form a line and they literally stood shoulder to shoulder, I laughed so hard. Like, you just established that you have, like, these fire and forget missile suits. Uh-huh. What the fuck? Like, activate your thrusters and have a mile wide picket line. What the fuck, man?
And this is
Modern Marines, I'd be like, what the fuck? You don't stand shoulder to shoulder.
You know, Jesus. It's very Starship Troopers, the Marines, which I have.
Yeah.
Show has so many.
But they know, when they showed us training, they were so badass. And then here they are in a combat going against six or seven blues, and they just fucking go I just was so disappointed. So disappointed. I want to see some really cool space tactics. I want you to believe me that you're taking over Ganymede, man.
Yeah, at the same time, this show is best when it's people talking to people.
Yeah.
When we get into the... Even the, like, when the Rossi fought the stealth ship, the interior was cool. The effects of the watching the tracer fire come through their ship and nearly
hit
them,
terrifying.
That was interesting. Yeah. But watching it outside with bullets, just they always do this like circular bullet,
right? It's like the
rotation.
Yeah. Have you guys ever seen The Last Starfighter?
I have not.
Long time ago.
Oh man,
long ago.
That starship has a maneuver called the Death Blossom, where it just spins 360 degrees and shits out bullets. And every single time the Rossi goes into combat, I'm like, it's doing the Death Blossom. And why not? It's a good move.
Yeah, it goes back to what you said about naval battles in ye old day, right?
Yeah.
Like, this is just three dimensional.
Line up, give him your broadside. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's. It's just kind of weird. There's a good book I'd recommend to you guys called Hard Time. That's a different one. That's also really good and basically about Belter life is what I would describe it as. It's not in this series of books, but it's very much about rock miners and the kind of the politics and the economy of that situation. But Down Below Station has spaceship battles, but these are ships that go faster than light. And so basically their naval battles are they're flying around at top speed and basically trying to predict where their enemies are going
to be. Yeah, right.
And basically say, okay, we're firing in that direction and hopefully they're there. And then you have to wait for the relay delay to tell you whether or not you got them. And meantime, you might get smoked and never see it coming.
Yeah, that sounds like the Honor Harrington stuff too. They have a similar kind of like the implications of just slower than faster than light combat. Good stuff.
Yeah, I love hard sci-fi. I'm so glad this show is good.
Yeah, I can't say enough about the special effects. Like, they are just fucking solid. In a way that the only thing that's slightly annoying is I wish they coached the actors to actually act as if there's slightly less than Earth gravity. Because it's jarring when I'm watching Thomas Jane watch a bird that's animated to act as if it's in a third Earth's gravity. And Thomas Jane is still just standing there like,
the hell's the deal with that nothing. Bird? I never really grasped whatever imagery they were going for with that stupid thing.
I don't either.
Yeah,
it's something about the love story. Like I feel like the love story between him and Julie
was a surprise. Bird in space?
No. When it arrived, I'm like, oh, this is a surprise. Not a good one necessarily. I think that was very underwritten,
and it
almost criminally so.
A hummingbird? Wouldn't a hummingbird in space just be totally whack? Like.
Yeah.
Without having to beat its wings against gravity.
It'd get fat. It'd be the size of a softball.
The ceiling every time, and it's like a balloon. It's just stuck up there, just...
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the big question mark for me is why aren't the Earthers, like, basically superpowered in low G? You know?
Yeah.
Why can't they jump around and...
Yeah. Like, the Earth Marines should be like the Spartans of old on Mars. Maybe we'll see that. Like, oh, you train in 1G? We live in 1G.
Yeah, I was born in 1G.
We train in 2G, fuckers. What do you think of that?
Right.
Yeah, it's like living at 10,000 feet.
It's a natural advantage.
A little bit longer than everybody else.
When we take over Mars, we're sending a bunch of Nepalese warriors that we specially trained to fight in the thin Martian atmosphere and gravity.
No, if it's about gravity, don't you want to be closer to the? So you want sea level? That's where your best fighters come.
They're gonna fight with pickaxes and ladders and.
I want mole men.
Mole men.
Yeah.
1.0000001G.
What else? I think we're definitely coming back at the end of the season
to
kind of like see how things are and like maybe make some predictions. Do we have any predictions? I think we've all actually kind of made predictions over the course of this podcast. But is there any other predictions you want to make or?
I've got
any last thoughts? Okay,
I think Amos turns on Naomi. at some point. We've seen the guard dog tactic for so long, but I think he likes Holden, and I think he'll be forced to choose between them in a moment, and I think he'll go Holden.
Interesting. I'm so glad that they didn't try to set it as a love triangle. I love when they revealed it, and like Amos and
they got a bet.
Yeah, instantly, awesome. Like, God damn it!
They're horsing around, which has got to be really scary with Amos when he puts you in a headlock. You've got to go, oh God, no!
It's like, who's more terrifying?
This could be it.
Who's more terrifying to tease? Amos on any random day, or Joe Pesci in Goodfellas? Like, which one's got you mopping the sweat off your brow more?
I think I'd still go Joe Pesci.
Yeah, Joe Pesci. Because I think he is crazy. Amos is just really, really rational.
Yeah, as long as you keep that in the back of my head, what would a robot do?
Right. Because Amos, he wouldn't be like, am I funny? He'd be like, look, if you don't stop bothering me, I'm going to kill you. Yeah. He would let you know.
Yeah,
and then
you'd
be like, fair enough, I'm backing down.
I'm going to go back over to my flop house in the brothel next door.
Yeah. Yeah, that's where he keeps my bed. Yeah, Amos is—he's a rock star. Okay, I think that's it for the Expanse podcast. Is there any other random bullshit we want to shoot?
I don't know. I mean, we trashed on Zack Snyder, which that was always the season of Direct that I was equally dreading and looking forward to. Was Zack Snyder?
Are we
just
gonna
trashing
do Snyder?
Yeah. And he's got a short enough run. Oh, Baby Driver trailer. Since who knows when Direct
Baby
if
Driver
it will come back. But have you guys seen this as Edgar Wright's next movie?
No.
So this, can you guys play a trailer while we can listen to like it's so good. I watched it this morning.
Those always go well.
It's got John Hamm in it.
Drop a marker. We will watch the trailer. All right.
I'm in.
Here's my reaction. Scott Pilgrim fucked the transporter.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's a good
that was that looked rad. That looked really good.
It's Edgar Wright. It is a movie about a kid who puts headphones in and listens to music while he does heist stuff.
I feel like he's gone back to the Hot Fuzz like the action movie parody and that's a good place. Like, that's my favorite of his movies. Mm-hmm. I know you like, I think, you know, obviously Shaun of the Dead because you're a zombie guy.
Hot Fuzz is my favorite.
Oh,
now.
Really? Yeah. Oh, fuck. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Because, like, some of that stuff, like, when he was running tits out over all those ledges and tables and shit, like, that was just a cool action sequence, but you can also tell how funny it is too. It's got a lot of good people. I think Kevin Spacey, John Hamm, the Scottish cousin from Downton Abbey,
Jamie Foxx
playing Amos.
He looks hot. This, I mean, like playing the like the crazy guy on the.
He's
heist.
Playing the Amos of the team.
Yeah, exactly.
who's the Holden?
I'm super jazzed for this. Movie. Edgar Wright knows how to shoot action. He does long shots. He does not do quick takes. I mean,
yeah, and he's got a lot of imagination.
Diegetic music love fest.
Yeah, I'm excited. So. I did not know I was excited about this, and now I am. Thank you, Levi.
Well, I know you guys, we started this with you talking about trailers that you missed in the movie theater because of that mix-up, so I thought I'd get out ahead.
We should do stuff like this more often. What else do you like? You like anything but The Expanse?
What else am I watching right now?
Because I'm always looking.
I'm excited
for
the next
TV
season
host.
Of Bosch on Amazon.
What?
I really like Bosch?
Oh, Bosch? No, not Bosch.
No.
No Bosch here.
The problem is that I'm at this point where work has got me busy enough. I come home.
You
I
got
have
the
baby
kid,
time for
right.
the immediate.
You got
and then
the
it's like, I've got 1 hour
like.
At the end of the day. What am I going to do with that?
Right.
I really want to check out Billions.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I've heard
Billions
the title.
Looks good. It's got
Paul
Pete
Giamatti.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is this a TV show?
Uh-huh.
And Sergeant Brody. It's got him in there too, right?
Is this an Amazon show or what is this on?
I think it's...
Oh, Showtime.
Billions is Showtime, yeah.
Right. Right.
Mm, interesting.
Which I don't have. That's one of the few premium subscriptions I don't have.
Yeah. Anytime you guys want to just talk TV, random movies, I know you've got a very... Eric has set me loose and he has taken our rock freighter and flown off to some other projects. And I'm left floating out here.
He'll come back to podcasting. black hole. You can't ever escape its orbit.
He does it too much.
He'll design a board game or two and launch another brew foundry, and I don't know.
Brew foundry, yes. One of those.
Have a world of his next world of submarines. He's going to launch World of Submarines, and then he'll be back.
World of space submarines.
Or maybe it'll be world of belts. Like you can just pilot the Rossinati. Every combat lasts 1.5 seconds.
I want like a asteroid.
You queue up. There's six other players, and you die within 5 seconds of contact.
I'm gonna send this into Cool Games Inc. I'm gonna say Sim Asteroid Station, where you basically build your own Eros. You've got you crack it open, and you look at where you're building your commercial sector, where your ship bay is. And then
it's like Tiny Death Star, only on Sirius.
Is that a game? Tiny Death Star?
Yeah, it was a really cool Lucas game. Like it was like a Sim City, but cartoon style Death Star. And for some reason, Lucas Arts pulled it. People were trading illegal ROMs and stuff of it, or illegal ISOs, or whatever the fucking Android APKs. So whatever the iPhone equivalent is. All right. I got to be going.
Yeah.
It's been a blast. I'm really into Tank for the Expanse. Sometimes it threatens to lose me, but I think I'm on board for the fucking monster movie now.
Yeah, well, I'll catch you guys in just a little over a month.
Yep. Have a good one. See you later.
Yeah, catch you later.